Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Understanding the WASP Service with the WASP Service CMD Tool in WebSphere Application Server. Today's presenters are Randall Anders, Alain Davili, and Paul Van Norman. Randall has been employed by IBM since February 2000. Since that time, he has worked on many WebSphere application server products dating back to version 3.5. Randall has had a positive impact on many teams during his tenure at IBM, such as system verification tests, development, beta education, and currently WebSphere Application Server Level 2 support. Alain joined the WebSphere team in 2003 and works in Level 2 customer support for the WASP admin team. As a senior member of the administration team, he is responsible for assisting customers with the debugging of WebSphere problems. Paul has been team lead for various WebSphere application server support teams since 2007. At this point in time, I would like to pass the presentation over to Randall, Alain, and Paul.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today for a presentation about understanding the WASP service with the WASP Service CMD tool in WebSphere Application Server. My name is Alain Del Valle, and I will be going through the first parts of the presentation. Joseph, let's go ahead and move over to slide 2. Before we start, I would like to define two terms that you will hear throughout this presentation so that there is no confusion. The first term is the WASP service command. This is a command line utility that is currently shipped in WebSphere to create a WebSphere Windows service. The second term is WASP service CMD. This is the utility we created to assist in the creation of a service for WebSphere application server. In today's agenda, we'll go over the WASP service command itself. What is the WASP service CMD? We'll go over some of the required permissions that are a must in order for these services to work. We'll also go over some required and optional parameters. Next, we'll go over some benefits of using the WASP Service CMD utility. Then we'll go through some examples. And finally, we'll do some problem determination, common problems, and a few known APARs that everyone should be aware of. Let's move over to slide 3. Okay, first of all, what is the WASP service command? The WASP service command is used to create a Windows service to start and stop a WebSphere application server. The WASP service command is invoked from the WebSphere app server root directory. It's called waspservice.exe. When creating a Windows service, there are many parameters that can be passed in. Let's go ahead and move over to slide 4. Okay, there are multiple parameters that are required, and without these, the service will not work properly. As you can see in the following example, the creation of a service requires many characters to be manually entered correctly. One misspelled parameter or incorrect path will cause the server not to start properly. There's many in that yellow box, and you'll see that any of those will cause a problem. So let's go ahead and move over to slide 5. Okay, the following permissions are required in order for this to work. They must be a user, an administrator user, or a member of the administrator's group. The other two parameters that are a must are, under the local security policies, you need to have the following two rights: act as part of the operating system, and also log on as a service. Let's go ahead and move over to slide 6. On this slide, we talk about a machine that is part of a domain. And if the user that wants to run the service is a user in the domain controller, the following needs to be done. On the local machine, not the domain controller, the user must have the following three rights. Same rights that we spoke about, basically part of the administrator's group in this case, act as part of the operating system, and log on as a service. If the service is running on the domain controller itself, which some clients tend to set this up, the user must be a member of the domain administrator's group on the domain controller itself. And it also needs to have act as part of the operating system on the domain security policy of the domain controller. All right, let's go ahead and move over to slide 7. Okay, next in this slide, we're going to go over the required parameters. The following parameters are always required. So basically, the first parameter is dash profile path. This is going to be a path to your profile directory for your where your WebSphere app server is. The next parameter is server name. In this case, you'll pass, like, let's say, for example, the default is server 1 or whatever server you name your own server, portal server, or whatever the case might be. Let's go ahead and move over to slide 8. In this slide, we'll be going over some optional parameters. The first one is dash add, but that one you use with the required parameters. Dash add and remove, I'll talk about these a little later in the presentation. So in the dash add, you use that and pass the service name, and this will create your service for you. The next parameter is configroot. So in this parameter, you want to give the whole path to the config directory. So basically, WebSphere app server, profiles, profile name, config. The next parameter is dash encode params. This parameter is used, you pass the dash encode params with the service name itself, and this is used in order to encode the passwords so they don't show in plain text. The next parameter is log file. You pass this parameter with your full path to your log directory. That way, WebSphere can actually record what the service is doing while the creation. Next parameter is very important. This is the dash log root parameter. This one, you want to give the path to where your name.pid lives. So the process ID lives normally on the logs directory for the server name. You want to give the full path to that so that it can actually pick up the status of your service, whether it started or stopped. Let's go ahead and move over to slide 9. In continuation to the optional parameters, we have the dash remove that you also pass with the required parameters, and you just do dash remove and then the service name, and you can go ahead and remove services from the registry itself. The next parameter is restart. There's two options you can do in the restart parameter, either true or false. So when you do the restart, basically if WebSphere detects that the service is down, if it's set to true, it'll try to automatically restart it. By default, it'll try to do this 3 times. If you set this to false, if the service fails, it won't get restarted again. The next parameter is dash start. The dash start, you can do it just like the same way as command line. You can basically start and stop your server by calling that parameter with the service name appended to it. You can also add some dash start args to your parameters. That's the next one we're talking about. So let's say if you have any JVM things you got to add in there, you can just add those in there and call it in the dash start args. The next parameter is dash start type. There's 3 things you could do in this one: automatic, manual, or disabled. So this one's actually taken when the operating system, the automatic is when your operating system reboots. If you want your service to automatically get restarted, you set it to automatic. If by any chance when you want to actually control your system manually, you just set the dash manual, and you can start and stop the service from the services panel itself. And finally, the last one is just disabled. If you want to disable the service, sometimes we set this one to debug if it's a start-stop issue with WebSphere itself. So we may disable the service in that. Randall will talk a little more about that later. Let's go ahead into slide 10. Continuation, we have status and service name. This will actually run in case you want to know if your service is running or if it stopped. The next parameter is stop. It basically does the same as the start, only backwards. So if you want to stop your service, you pass the dash stop and service name, and you'll be able to stop your server that way. The next one is stop args. You can add some, let's say you wanted to pass some security credentials in there, you can pass the dash username and dash password in there. That way, WebSphere will take in the credentials and stop the server for you. Or you can also add some extra JVM parameters or whatever any stock product may need in order for WebSphere to start and stop. Okay, the next parameter, this one is the dash user ID. This one's needed, let's say if you're going to run it as a different user than the local user, you may want to run it as the logon. It'll actually update the logon property. So the dash user ID, you pass this and then pass the, let's say the domain user account in there, and it'll run it as that guy instead. And then you also pass the dash password along with that one, so it has the password for that user. The next parameter we have is washome. This is just basically your app server root directory. Normally it's WebSphere app server where your product binaries are installed. Let's go ahead and move over to slide 11. Okay, so what is the WASP service CMD itself? WASP service CMD is a utility to assemble various lengthy parameters for the WASP service command. This utility uses the original WASP service.exe, but gathers all the parameters automatically from the install. And finally, at the end, we run the command WASP service.exe to create the service itself. The utility helps reduce the opportunity of any human errors, that fat fingering or anything like that can cause a problem. WASP service parameters options are presented in a numbered list for selection based on the system configuration that you may have. Let's go ahead and move over to slide 12. So some more benefits of the WASP service CMD. It provides a user-friendly interface for creating complex WebSphere window services via the command line. It can also be used by any stack product which acquires their own WebSphere window service, such as Maximo, Portal. There's many others out there that can be used for. The paths needed to create the service are detected automatically as the user chooses from our menu. Let's go ahead and move over to slide 13. Okay. You are presented with user-friendly numbered prompts and hints to assist you, which you'll see in the examples we'll go over. Utility also encodes the passwords, so it does not show in plain text, either in the command line or in the logs. It can be used to list the status of WebSphere services to show if a specific server is running or if it's stopped. It also provides the ability to enable or disable tracing by just typing a number in. Let's go ahead and move over to slide 14. The removal of services is simplified by placing them in a list format. The utility also provides a WASP service CMD log to maintain any commands in case they want to be used at a later time. The utility supports version 6, 6.1, and 7.0. Recently, it has been released as the WASP service helper in WebSphere Application Server version 8. And it's also located in the bin directory, but it's called, like I stated, WASP service helper so that there's no confusion. In many cases, it can be used to debug stop and start server issues, since many times you're required to remove the service or re-add it to see if this issue lies within the service itself, or if it's an actual command line, or the WebSphere product itself is the one causing the problem. Let's go ahead and move over to slide 15. What I'll do is I'll pass it over to Paul Van Norman so he can go over some examples of this utility at work.
Thanks, Elias. So this is the examples page here shows the main menu, and these are the items that you can select off of the menu. We have the watch service command add, and this is a shorter version. It only really prompts you for the required parameters, and that way for the regular user, they can just hit take the required and get through it quite quickly. For the second option is the add with all the optionals. It'll walk you through all of the parameters that the watch service command takes to create, and so you can take defaults or add your own. Third option is to remove. It'll list, and we'll see that later. It'll list the profiles, and you just select the profile that you want to remove. Also shows the next one, the status. It'll show you the status of whether a service is running. Again, it'll present you with a list of profiles that are installed, and you can check the status of it. And the last option is to enable tracing. If there's some sort of problem that we're having with the server starting properly when it's running as a service, this is how we can enable tracing. Slide 16, please. What we have here, in the yellow square, this represents the command line, and this is the menu as you would see it when you launch the executable, the watchservice.exe. And as you can see, this is run from the Webster app server bin directory. So when you type in the command, the first thing you'll see is the menu options. We just went through the 1 to 5. And in this case, at the very bottom, you can see you're prompted to select one of the numbers. The default, you'll see that a lot on the menu. The default, if you just hit enter, it will actually take number 1, for instance. And you can always quit the menu if you would just type in Q. So anyway, in this case, we've hit 1 to add a new existing with a minimum parameters. Slide 17, please. All right, so the top section just shows you that's what we've selected. We've selected number 1, which is to add or update a Webster service with a minimum parameters. And so the next thing we do, the next section shows you that we found the profiles on your system. And it's listing it there, and now the prompt is to select a number of the profile that you want to use. In this case, we want to create a service for the deployment managers, which is number 1. So we select number 1. And the next 3 lines are just kind of a little bit of an output to the user. It's basically saying that we found the profile. We're looking in the setup command line for that profile, and in there we've actually found the name of the cell and the name of the node, which we use a little bit later on. So just a little bit of user feedback. Slide 18, please. All right, so once we've selected a profile, the different various profiles can have a number of different servers. In this case, with a deployment manager profile, we're only going to have the one server, which is the DMGR. And so it's a one item list, which is number 1. But we also include here a little bit of hints and warnings. And here it shows that if the application server is running, then, or if there's an application server in an NV environment, then you should really not be putting on the application server. It should only be on the deployment manager or the node agent. And the node agent can be used to start the server. So you don't want to create a Windows service for an application server in a federated environment. And the reason is there are some conditions where there's a timing issue where the node agent may be starting, and the node agent needs to be running before your server is running. So there may be a problem with timing where a Windows service may attempt to start your application server before the node agent's running. So you could run into a problem. So this, again, it's just to give you a little heads up, a little warning, and an explanation why you really shouldn't be doing that. In this case, we're doing the deployment manager, so we don't really have to worry about it. So we've hit number 1, which is the DMGR. Slide 19, please. All right, so the next option, and these are the options that Alain went through earlier, but here we have a prompt. It's asking you for a service name, and this is a free text. You can name it whatever you want, and we kind of give you an example of the one that we usually use when we ship with Webster. It's created to Webster, but you don't have to use that. You can use whatever you want. So in this case, we typed in 6.1 service as user. And then we hit enter. The next prompt that comes up is the restart policy. And there's two options for that. One was the automatic. And here we're giving a little bit of an explanation. It restarts the service if it fails. And number two is the manual. And if you look down at the very bottom, again, on the left, bottom left, we've got the default, which is 1. And so if you just hit enter, you'd accept the default, which is 1. And this allows you to really quickly, after you type in your name, hit enter, and then launch the command, and really quickly, within, you know, seconds, create a Windows service. Okay, so in this case, we're selecting number 2, and we hit enter. Slide 20, please. The next required parameter is the start type. And again, we have two options. One's automatic, one's manual. And again, Eli had gone through the explanation of these. The default here is 1 for automatic restart. And again, we're selecting our own. We're choosing number 2. And we hit enter. Next prompt that pops up is a check to see whether you have security enabled. And a lot of these hints and notes and warnings that you may see through the tool, these are things that we've found cause users to create PMRs. They had ran into a problem of some sort, open up a new PMR, and then we used whatever to resolve them. So these are kind of hints and warnings so that you don't run into the problems. So it's asking you if security is enabled, and in this case it is, so we say the response was yes. And then we provide the username, we mask the password, and then we ask you to verify the password a second time. And these passwords end up being encoded when they're put into the log, the command log, so that you can actually use these later and you don't have to worry about a security risk about, you know, people seeing the password or the password being exposed. Next slide, please. 21. All right, and the last portion here, item, is to execute. So you went through the whole process. It's prompting you. It's asking you for all the parameters. And as you can see, what it's doing is it's showing you everything it's about to execute. And you can actually copy that and paste it on the command line and execute it, with the exception of the password where you'd actually have to type it in. Here we're masking it. And so it's showing you what's about to run, and it's asking you if you want to go ahead and run it. And in this case, yes. We put Y. We also could have just put enter. At this point, we're now passing the command that we assembled, and we're passing it to the WASP service executable. And the messages that you see afterwards, which is adding the service and the service name, config root, server name, all those parameters, this is actually feedback from the WAS service itself rather than from the WAS service command tool. Now, at the very bottom, you can see that we just did a little bit of a screenshot of the Windows Services panel, and we've highlighted the section where the new service has been created. And we've got a box around it that was actually, this will be started as the local system. So, again, we've got a positive feedback, and here we check the Windows services, and it confirms that it was created successfully. Slide 22, please. All right, so the next one we'll go through rather quickly. We'll just, the difference here will just be the change, the added parameters from the optional. So we're not going to go through all the required ones again. So these ones are just a kind of continuation. Okay, so the optional portions that we would have added here were the start arguments, and we don't see too many of those. Line mentioned that you can use some JVM arguments. Normally we would, you know, put that somewhere else, but it's something that you can do, and it could be setting up an environment, a batch file or a bat file or whatever. So you're given that option. The next one is the log root. There is a default, so you don't have to enter this, but if you want, and some administrators do, they want to put all the log files of all the profiles in a specific location so it's easier for them to find or for their operators to use. So here you can enter the fully qualified path to your log root. And again, it gives you an example so you know exactly how it should be typed in and hopefully, again, prevent any syntax problems. Page 23, please. Next one here also is a log root. And again, with the same stories above, here we need a fully qualified path to the log file. And it also shows you, again, the syntax where to use it. Config root is the next option that's presented. Again, same thing. We enter, give you an example of the fully qualified path, and you can type in your own if you want to add your optional path. Slide 24, please. The next one, here we go. Again, we're going for we're prompting for security. And here we're again giving you the hint that the user needs to be a member of the administrative role with the authority to stop service such as the admin or operator roles. Now, this here is not an operating system user ID we're mentioning. We're actually using this as a WebSphere administrative ID. So this ID may or may not exist on the operating system or in your user, will be in your user registry for WebSphere. But the reason we're doing this, we're asking you for this in advance, is because we're actually passing it, and it will be required as one of your stop arguments. If you have security enabled, you need it to pass it as a stop argument so that you will have permissions to stop the service. So we'll follow the flow here. So with that little bit of explanation, where we asked, is security enabled? Yes, in this case, yes, it is. We're prompting you for the username, Randall Test. We're prompting for the password and verification for the password. The next pop-up is it kind of shows you. So because we're adding this, this really needs to be added as a stop argument, but you also have the option of adding additional stop arguments. We're kind of explaining what we're doing here. So we're adding the username and password as a stop argument, and then we're letting you know that, and then we're prompting you if you want to add anything extra. So hopefully that's not confusing to the end user. They know they don't have to type it in a second time if they're used to creating a service the old way. Page 25, please. And then again, the very last step is we prompt you to run the command. And here you can see the fully qualified command that we're about to execute. And again, you can see why it would be so easy to make a small mistake somewhere, a typo, uppercase, lowercase, anything like that. It gets to be a very long string. And again, so it's showing you all the parameters and what the settings are. And if you saw that you did something wrong, if you wanted to just start manually, is true instead of false or whatever, you can just cancel out of here and just redo it. Or copy and paste it to the command line and make your change there. In any case, we went ahead and we executed it. The default was yes, so we just hit enter. And the last portion of it, we're saying adding service, 6.1 service as user. This is the feedback that we're getting from the wasservice.exe command that shipped with Windows. At the very end, it shows that it was added successfully. And again, we took a little bit of a screenshot with a highlight showing that the service was added and where to look. Slide 26, please. The next menu item was to remove a service. And you select number 3, and it'll list all of the services that it found. And what we're finding is we found 4 services. And let me see here. We're selecting number 1. And it's prompting you, or it's giving you feedback just to let you know that, yeah, we found 6.1 service, and we are about to remove that one. So it gives you a little bit of prompt, something very specific as to the command line, so that at the last second, if you accidentally selected the wrong service, you can back out of it. So in this case, it's the right service. We push yes. And we get feedback from the wasservice.exe that the service was removed. And then if we check the Windows Services panel, we can see that the service is in fact gone. You're also prompted at the very end whether or not you want to go ahead and delete another one or not. And in this case, we hit no for no. Page 27, please. The fourth menu item was the status of a service. Again, you select number 4, and it lists all of the services that it found, and you select the service that you're interested in. And when we select number 1, we can see that the feedback that we get from the WASP service.exe that the service has actually stopped. And this might be something important that you want if you're running some sort of script and you need to make sure that the service is running or not. This is something you may want to check there. You're prompted whether or not you want to check another service at the end. In this case, we do not. And next page, 28, please. All right, and the last menu option was to enable tracing. If sometimes there's the server does not start for whatever reason, we may need to go through some debugging techniques to find out. In this case, one of the options is we need to enable tracing, and so we select 5, and it tells you, it gives you a status because it's a toggle. It tells you the current status. So tracing could already have been enabled, and then if that is the case, then you just quit. If it's not enabled, then you can go ahead and enable it. And it gives you a little bit of an update that this tracing capability came in a fixed pack for version 6.1.17, 6.0.29, and 7.0. So if you have previous versions of WebSphere, then this tracing won't work for you. All right, so in this case, we hit yes, and the feedback is that tracing is enabled. Page 29, please. The WASP, when you enable tracing, the WASP service, the command log. So all the commands that we're actually running is kept in a command log, and this is kind of an auditing thing. You can review it later, or you can copy and paste it if you wanted to make some small changes like username or password, something like that. We actually keep that in the WASP root bin directory. And it's good for if the service wasn't created properly or as you expect, you can actually go back there and you can actually see how it was created. And you can actually copy and paste these again to the on the command line and they'll work. Page 30, please. All right. So Randall Anders will continue on with the next section for problem termination and common problems. Randall?
Slide 31, please. So let's look through a few scenarios here from a problem determination perspective. If you're trying to start the service, and here's a few scenarios of if it doesn't start. Here's some things that you kind of want to look at and ask yourself. So number one, if the service doesn't start, the first thing you want to ask yourself is, do you have the correct operating system permissions? Right? Is the user that's trying to start the service, is he an administrator? And or a member in the administrator group? Does he have the access part of the operating system? Does he have the logon as a service privilege? The last two are privileges, access part of the operating system and logon as a service. If you open a PMR and you don't have either of these three set, that's the first thing we're going to tell you, is that these things have to be set in order to create or run or start a service. This is the first thing off the top you need to check. The first one can be found in the regular Windows users panel. The last two, you have to look in the local security policy in order to determine if the user is a member of those two permissions. Slide 32, please. So let's say all those things are set, but yet the service still doesn't start. So here's kind of a sanity check to know whether or not it's an actual WASP service issue or if it's an issue with WebSphere itself. If you open the PMR, the very first thing we would tell you to do is disable the service. So you go into the panel, disable the service, and then try to start the server from the command line. If the server starts successfully, then we know for a fact that there's an issue with the Windows service. We can start to take the next steps. The next thing you would do is you could delete and recreate the service using WASP service CMD if you're in version 6.1 or version 7, or if you're in version 8, you can use WASP service helper. So this is kind of a sanity check as far as to if you really need to determine, okay, where does the issue lie? We suggest doing these two things first. Check the operating system permissions, and then the second thing you do is disable the service. The server starts, we know we've got an issue with the service, and now we can try doing things like deleting the service with the tool and recreating it and seeing if we still have an issue. Slide 33, please. Okay, after you've recreated the service, and now it still doesn't start, so now we want to start checking APARs or install the latest fix pack. Maybe you're at a down-level version on 6.1, 6.10.27 or something. I think the latest is 39 or 41 or something like that, or if you're at a down-level version on version 7, then you may want to just go up to the latest fix pack to see if there have been any issues there. Or you may want to try to delete and recreate the service again. Sometimes we've seen that deleting, maybe the first time the service wasn't created using the tool, and then they go through these steps, and now they open a PMR, and we've said, okay, use the tool to delete the service and use the tool to recreate it, and that's resolved some issues. Slide 34, please. Now, if you've done these things and the server will not start, still will not start, you've recreated the service, you've got all the operating system permissions and things correct, and the service still won't start, then, and you can actually do these things, and there's one thing missing here, you can actually do these at any point, right? You can go and delete the Java Shared Class Cache, which is located in the documents and settings, and whoever the user is that's logged on to the system is going to be under that username, local settings, application data, Java shared resources. What happens is multiple users who use the system can have a lock on certain classes in the cache, and another user may have a lock on that, and you may need to go in and delete the shared class cache in order to free things up. The one that's missing on this that should be the second bullet is you can run, there's a command in the WAS root bin directory called clear class cache. Clear class cache, and then there's another one called osgi config init. And my apologies for not having those two commands on this slide, but those are also two commands that you can run, clear class cache and osgi config init. You can run those two commands, which would essentially do the same thing as clearing the cache out. If you do those things and they don't seem to resolve the issue, as the last resort, you can disable the Java Shared Class Cache by going into the admin console and for the process definition for the JVM in question, just specifying the -x shared classes colon none. And what that does is that removes the shared class cache ability, period, right, for that server that's running. And I would say use this as a last option because there may be other users on the system that need to benefit from having a shared class cache. So you use this last option with caution and haste. Slide 35, please. So if you've done all these things, and you're still not able to start the service, at this point is when you want to enable tracing, try to start the service. When it fails, review the WAS service trace log to see if there's any exceptions in the stack there or anything in the log. You notice that the trace, it's going to always be written to C:, WAS service trace.log. It's kind of hard-coded that way where it will always be in the root. So if you're ever wondering where it's written to, it's going to be in C:. Slide 36, please. A few more issues here. Let's say the service fails to start after you've restarted Windows. So something's occurred. Maybe you've had to apply a Windows security patch, and you need to restart Windows, and the service doesn't start. So the first thing you want to do is ask yourself, is the application server started as a service? If so, I think Paul mentioned this earlier, that's not the best practice. In fact, the Info Center will tell you if that application server is federated to a deployment manager, federated into a cell, that you should not create a service for the application server. What you want to do is create the service for the node agent and then make sure the node agent has the monitoring policy set to auto start and that the resumed state is set to running. That way, when you restart Windows, the node agent service will start automatically, and then the node agent will start the application server. You can create a service for a standalone application server. You can do that with no problem. You just can't, you should not create a service for an application server if it's federated to a deployment manager already. Slide 37, please. Okay, let's say the service starts, but when the user logs off Windows, the service stops. This is because you run into this issue with domain admins and having non-admins as users, and I think the issue here is that if the domain admin creates the service for the regular user and then that regular user logs off of Windows, then that service is going to stop when he logs off because he doesn't have permission to start it. Only the person that created the service does. So you should be aware of that. Slide 38, please. Here's another one where if the service status does not show correctly in the admin console, it doesn't show that it stopped or started. We've actually seen this happen, and we're still in discussion as to whether this is working as designed or if it's an actual defect. But what happens is if you go into the admin console and you stop a server or you stop the node agent, the status will show correctly. Let's say you restart the node agent. You go into the console, select the node agent, you say restart. When it stops, the status is reflected correctly in the Windows Services panel. It'll go from started to stopped. But when the node agent restarts, the status in the Windows service does not go to started. So you have an issue where the admin console says the node agent is restarted, and it actually is restarted, but the Windows Services panel doesn't reflect the same status. So now if you go and you try to stop that Windows service, you can't because it's going to think it doesn't know that it started already. So in order to stop the service, you would have to stop it from the command line. So it's an easy workaround, and we see PMR is open for this. You should just know that, I mean, there is a workaround. If that's the case, all you need to do is stop it from the command line. Then you can start it from the services panel, and all should be well. But Windows is responsible for detecting those Java processes under the covers, and so that's why it's kind of working as designed. But we have some things in mind that we may be able to do in this area, but we're not quite sure yet. So. Slide 39, please. Some other just common problems, you know, that you can see that we want to try to prevent you from getting tripped up on. Misspelled paths will cause the service to fail, of course, and the service must be recreated if new parameters are needed. So if you need to update something, you'll have to go through, and if you want to change the config root or change security, then you have to go back through and actually create the service again, and it will append the new parameters to it. Slide 40, please. So here's an issue where in version 6.1 and version 7, this issue does not exist in version 8, it's been fixed there, but if you need to start the service as a domain user, then what you need to do is run the tool, select option 2 for all the parameters, follow all the prompts, but don't execute the command. What you want to do is cut and paste the command into a notepad and then add the following two parameters, -user ID and the domain /username and password. You can see how we've done that in the red circle there. So if you have a domain user, you need to specify -user ID, Austin, and then or the domain and the domain name or the domain user there. And you can see in the bottom right that that's how it would show up in the Windows Services panel. Slide 41, please. So some of the known APARs that are there, starting from 7.0.17, we didn't go all the way back to 7.0, but we do list a few here. So here's one, PM32369, where Watch Service is unable to read the PID when Microsoft Windows Service is started. The failing scenario is here in the blue box. a Microsoft Windows service is created to start the deployment manager. You start the service. The deployment manager starts, but the service fails. With Watch Service Tracing enabled, it shows the following. If you see this, this is how you know you've run into this issue. Get PID for server from standard out. Could not get PID from standard out. It's listed there in bold. If you see that, that's the APAR that you problem that you're running into. You need to upgrade to 70017. The issue there is there's a problem extracting the PID from the standard output generated from the application server. So you've got something to search on there that's listed in bold. If you see that in the Watch Service Trace Log, you know you need to upgrade to the latest fix pack. Slide 42, please. This is in 70015, PM224498, the Watch Service timed out, getting the PID from the file. And if you look in the Watch Service Trace, you normally see the following. You'll look for parse PID from standard out. And when you see not PID and then this ADM U0116I message, that's how you know you've run into this issue. And you'll get a timed out getting PID from the file right after that. The PID file is usually created and listed in start server log. And so if it's timing out trying to get into that log, then this is the issue that you're running into. What happened is the code expected the app server to write a file within 15 seconds of starting. And so if you've got a pretty busy environment and it takes longer than 15 seconds to start the server, then the file might not be produced at that time. So they changed the code and increased the timeout value to 300 seconds to allow a little longer time for start server.log to be produced. Slide 43, please. In 70013, we've got PM15004, where Watch Service fails when updating an existing service. It fails to resubstitute some strings in the existing service entry, which causes a failure. The only feedback that you'll get is this string index out of bounds exception, when you won't have a stack trace. So the code was updated to more rigorously resubstitute some of these service entries. So your key here is the string index out of bounds exception. You see that in the Watch Service Trace Log, then you know where we need to go. Slide 44, please. In 70011, Watch Service has a default timeout value of 20 minutes. The stop server command, if you receive the 7705E error, 1,200 seconds after running the stop server command, in spite of specifying a timeout value. There was an issue in the code there where we had a fixed timeout value of 20 minutes and returned a minus 1. So they went through and they adjusted the code for that, and it searches the arguments past the stop server and start scripts and uses that timeout value if provided. So there's another guideline there in the blue box as to what you should look for on that particular issue. Slide 45, please. And in 7009, PK94821, Watch Service does not recognize the server started when running the Japanese locale, because we do have quite a few clients that in that region that use our tool. The service code searches the log files for the process ID to verify successful initialization, and the message translation, which contains the process ID, is not in the expected format, so the ID couldn't be retrieved. So the local fix is disable the service and run WebShift from the command line, and the code was changed to locate that process ID. So, again, moving up to the latest version, if you have this issue, fixes that problem. Slide 46, please. So we've talked about tracing quite a bit. We showed you one or two ways to do that. Just kind of wanted to review that one more time. There's two ways to enable Watch Service tracing. You can do it automatically or you can do it manually in the Watch Service trace.enabled file. Slide 47. Okay, the first way is doing it automatically, which we saw earlier in the example. It's option 5. What it does is it, again, creates this Watch Service trace.enabled file in the C drive, and in that file are the words true, and at runtime when you run that, we search for that, and if we see that, then we enable the tracing there. That was introduced in 60229, 61017, and 700. Slide 48, please. And for manually enabling traces, you would just create this particular file that's called wadservicetrace.enabled, and it is case-sensitive, and it needs to be in C colon, and you enter the word trace there, which is case-insensitive, but the name of the file actually does need to be the way it's listed on the screen. If you do that, put the word trace in it, save the file, recreate the problem, you will get a wadservicetrace.log. Slide 49. In the log, some of the things that we look for to determine successful execution, one of the first things we want to look at is the what's in bold here in the yellow box, start server colon executable. That tells us that WAS service has actually started and it has passed control to the start server batch file. If we saw an exception before this point, then that tells us there's an issue with the window service itself. If we get to this point, that means we've passed control on to start server and the Windows service is out of the picture. The start server output is written to wsstartdeploymentmanager.log and the WAS service only writes the tracing. So if you're looking where is the actual WAS service tracing, it's only going to be written in wsservicetrace.log. Slide 50, please. On slide 50 here, some other things we want to look at in the WAS service trace log is the, you'll see in the yellow box, the WAS service waits for the JVM to notify that start has completed. So you'll see that, and then you'll see WAS service main start server return. So this lets the WAS service know, one, we're waiting for start server to return, and then once it returns, you'll see this particular line in the WAS service trace. So this gives you a good way to know every step of the way. If something happens between bullet one and bullet two, it gives us more information and helps us pinpoint where the problem could be. And then the last bullet here, the WAS service opens the PID file and verifies the running process. So wait for PID file. We're waiting for it to actually be written, and then we try to open it, and we write whether or not we can actually get the PID or not. And once we have gotten it, then we note in the WAS service trace that there has been a successful start of that WAS process. So those are some of the things that if WAS tracing is enabled, you can do this on your own. This PD, you can determine on your own where the actual problem is. We've given you a few points to check as kind of sanity checks to say, okay, I didn't see this message, or the exception occurs between this one and this one. That helps you pinpoint a problem, and if you have to open a PMR, it's good information for us as well. Slide 51, please. So in summary, we tried to introduce to you and explain why there is a need for having the WAS service CMD. The WAS service.exe that comes out of the box with the product requires quite a few parameters and is very error-prone when having to type in 8 to 10 parameters manually. You can see how you can easily have spelling errors and fat fingers, which can cause problems. The WAS service CMD, again, is allowed here to reduce the opportunity for human error. And you've heard us mention a couple of names, and just to drive home the point, in version 8, the name of the tool is actually WAS service helper. And in version 7 and version 6, it's called WAS Service CMD. And on the next slide, I'll show you where you can, if you're on version 6.1 or version 7, we'll show you where you can actually download the tool from. If you've already moved up to version 8, it's already in your bin directory. But it does allow passing of security parameters, provides the ability to enable and disable traces, and it logs commands which can be used at a later date. And it requires additional privileges for domain users. Slide 52, please. So from a reference standpoint and where you want to look for any information on the WAS service, if you go to the Info Center in version 6.1 or version 7 and you search for WAS service, just regular WAS service, you'll get to the page that says WAS service commands, and about a third of the way down, there's a note that says, to prevent any errors, use the WAS service CMD, and it points to a link. So in that Info Center link, down at the bottom, it points to bullet number two, which is a tech note entitled Using Watch Service CMD to Create Windows Services. Here's where you can actually download the zip file. All it is a zip file. You would download it and extract it and place the contents into the WAS root bin directory, and you're ready to go. It's nothing to install, and that's important for clients to note because I know in their production systems they have to have change requests and all that sort of thing, and it usually takes time to get change requests approved, and especially if something is going to be installed on a production system. But this isn't anything that you're installing. You're just going to extract it. It's an executable. You drop it in the bin directory, and you're ready to go. If you want to know more information about what it does and you want to see all the panels again in detail, in more detail than what we've provided in this presentation, the third bullet will help you there. There's a DeveloperWorks article entitled The Support Authority, and you can get to this third bullet from a link in the second bullet. So on the page that you go to download the tool, we'll take you to this third bullet that provides you more details and shows you all the commands, all the screenshots, and more details of what the tool does. And if you need to troubleshoot some of the things that we went over in the PD and common problem section in this presentation, you can find in this fourth bullet that's called Troubleshooting Guide for WebSphere Application Server for Windows Services. And I think at this point we'll pass it back to Joseph Lamb.
Thank you, Randall, Alain, and Paul for a great presentation today. At this point in time, Kathleen, we would like to open the lines for any questions.
At this time, I'm showing no questions on the phone lines.
Thank you, Kathleen. And at this time, we will conclude the presentation.